This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. 5 times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Well, hey, welcome in there, everybody. Happy Tuesday to you. Good Tuesday. Happy, fun, exciting Tuesday for us here. There's a lot of good stuff on the docket today. Tommy, I'm in a good mood. Just because we got baseball like 2 days away, 3 days away, whatever it is. Like, that's got me jacked up today. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster here, Max Power producing for us. Back in the studio, you can give us a call. 869-1240 is the number if you're listening to us on KFH. You can also leave us your video comments, Facebook, YouTube, X. Thanks for watching us on 12 News Connected as well. And thanks for listening to us on the Odyssey app, where you can stream us live or you can take us with you in listen to us in podcast form anytime that you'd like. If you do that, you can leave us voice messages that we'll get to on the air if need be. Those are easy to do. You just push a little microphone, you leave us a message, and Max get those and can put those out over the air. We got a lot of fun stuff today. We'll continue to talk about the Sweet 16. We'll get Tommy's take on what we talked about yesterday quite a bit on has this tournament been lacking anything, which has been a national narrative that's been floating out there. I've heard it from a lot of different places. So we'll do that. We've got Felix Johnson in to talk some Chiefs football, our Chiefs insider. Looking forward to that conversation. Of course, we mentioned the Royals start in just a couple of days. Good news on the injury front yesterday with Vinny Pasquantino. So we'll touch on that, look ahead. A significant injury last night that will impact K-State's women's chances at reaching the Final Four. We'll tell you what happened late in a game for their opponent in the next round. And Royals rumors on a potential site to move across the border to Kansas from our colleagues up in Kansas City. A lot to get to today. We'll give away some HTO. We'll have some fun. Tommy, glad to have you back. Glad to have you back in and in one piece.
Good to be back. You and I were talking. Sometimes you get sick and it just like comes on you fast and furious, and that's the way it was the other night. But good to be back here. Good to be feeling better today. And it sounds like a jam-packed show. I'm excited to get right into it.
Yeah, we have lots of fun stuff here. Let's Let's start with a couple of the news items, and then just to get those sort of out there, and then we can digest them as we go through the show. So a couple of things for the Royals. Vinny Pasquantino yesterday, the news is that he thinks he's going to be able to go despite a strained hamstring over the weekend. That's the report. It sounds like that's really what he wants to do. There is some optimism that he'll be ready for opening day. He won't play in these final games in Arlington. He's going to hit in the cage today, according to Aaron Rodgers yesterday, and then he's just got to be pain-free. So that's great news, Tommy. I mean, the Royals are doing things offensively. They lead the league in about a million offensive categories this spring. Vinny Pasquantino being in the middle of it is critical. It's critical because we love their top four as much as any top four in baseball, quite honestly. And that's proven itself this spring. And it looks like he'll be ready to go.
Well, and I don't know if you guys touched on it yesterday or not, but I think a fairly significant addition to the team, Mark Canna, comes over to provide reinforcements, a veteran bat, a veteran outfielder. I had sort of thought all along throughout this spring training that they would try to do something to acquire a little bit more offense, especially in the outfield. And Mark Canna, he's played in a handful of games for the Royals since they brought him over in spring training, and he's done a lot. He's gotten on base a lot. He looks to be that offensive threat. So I think overall, knowing that even before they brought him in for spring training, they were doing great with all of their offensive statistics. And so having Mark Canna in place and then having Vinny Pasquantino healthy, if he can go for opening day, it looks like they've got this offense rolling.
Yeah, I don't know how much he moves the needle, but he at least helps, right? And I think that they'll have plenty of depth at that particular position just because of, where they can move some guys around. Of course, Salvador Perez can play over there. I think it's more about just can we just get that group of four together for a while and see if they're as high octane as we think they can be, because I think they can be. I don't know what's going to happen in the next five spots in the lineup. I think time will tell there. But when you just stack up the way that those guys seemingly fit together, it could be epic for Kansas City. Whereas the strength of the team last year was the starting rotation for sure. The strength of the team could be the offense this year. I think we're seeing that play out in the spring. So we'll get into that in just a little bit. Another news item, Juju Watkins last night. I don't know if you saw this. I didn't until this morning. It's just, you'd figure they'd blow through Mississippi State on their way to meet Kansas State in the Elite Eight on the women's side. She tore her ACL, Tommy, which is just brutal to see those kinds of injuries this time of year. But that does open the door for K-State to potentially get into the Final Four. You got to remember, K-State was, I think, ranked second right before Yoki Lee went down with her injury. That's how good this team is. And she's back and she looks healthy to me. Yoki Lee does. So, now without Juju Watkins there, I would say chances are pretty good for K-State to pick up a couple more wins.
Yeah, USC doesn't go 30-3 with just Juju Watkins. Like, she's a major component of it, but they've got a significant amount of talent up and down that roster. And so it's not like it just becomes a cakewalk all of a sudden for Kansas State, but I certainly do think when you lose your top player, your top scorer, the one that, is kind of the star on the team. Yeah, sure. It definitely does crack the door open a little bit more for Kansas State. And I think that considering that just from an injury perspective, as you mentioned, that, it looks like the Wildcats are at full strength and USC is not, then yeah, I know that, even from an odds perspective, USC's odds to win a championship have increased dramatically. I think that you've got to keep in mind that they do have a lot of talent. Your path got a little bit easier, but you can't take the rest of the team for granted.
Right, no question. But I think, to K-State's credit, we thought they might be Final Four good when healthy for a lot of this season. And then they just didn't stay healthy. So that happened last night. So we'll keep our eye on that for sure. But that was another big sort of news item that happened, and they play I think Saturday, there's actually not a line out on that game yet. You can't do anything really with it. I looked. I was like, well, what is K-State now? They're going to be favored. What's their chance to get on to the Final Four? That bet's not available. You can still get them to win the women's national championship at like 60-1, but you can't get anything else. So we'll kind of keep our eye out and see.
And by the way,
as you mentioned, what that impact might be.
How devastating is that for Juju Watkins? I mean, somebody that, you know, has kind of picked up the throne of being the top star in women's college basketball. And, you've got this path to win a national championship. Your team has far and away been probably the best team in women's college basketball all year, and you're the best player. And then you go down with that injury. I mean, it opens the door for Kansas State, but man, that's just devastating for USC.
She has absolutely lived up to the hype of, taking the women's basketball mantle. She's had an incredible season. It's just terrible. Just terrible. And I hate it. And I hate it anytime because it's an ACL. Like, you don't know what this is going to do next year, too. But it's like seeing it with KJ Adams. Like, really, at this point of the season? Man, it's tough. It's tough. But the games will still be played. And K-State happens to be playing in the next one that they'll play. So we'll keep our eye on it. All right, when we come back, what about those Royals rumors to come to Kansas? We'll tell you what they had to say up in Dusty and Fesco in Kansas City next.
It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. We are glad to be here with you. Shocker baseball on the road tonight in Stillwater facing Oklahoma State. You can catch soccer baseball all season long right here on 97.5, 1240 KFH, or catch it online. Download the app, visit odyssey.com, and search for KFH. Glad to be back with you, everybody, here. Let's talk a little Royals. Off the field news yesterday, as kind of not, I don't want to say out of nowhere, because it's just been being followed pretty consistently by Bob Fesco up there, but our colleagues up at 96.5, The Fan. Fesco said something yesterday that certainly perked our ears up down here. This will be, we'll play it for you and then we'll react to it. So this was Bob yesterday on Fesco and Dusty. Again, on 96.5, The Fan, in regards to the Royals and potentially where they might play their baseball in the future. Here we go.
It looks like from everybody you talk to, it seems like it's just about, I's dotted, T's crossed, that this thing's going to be at 119th and Knoll at the Sprint campus. And just, having the conversations with both people in Arizona, people here locally as well, kind of going back and forth and, connecting the dots and all that kind of stuff. People are more and more talking about it like it is happening. There's no more well if. It's almost like when now it's going to be happening. And the interesting thing about the Sprint campus that I didn't realize, and got this information over the weekend, I'm sure you could look it up as well if you wanted to. Do you realize that site is only 10 acres smaller than the sports complex right now where both stadiums are? So 10 acres is not a lot. I mean, that is not a lot. And you're only using it for one stadium. And the stadium is going, from what I've been told, inside where the park parking garages are. Do yourself a favor, walk around and take kind of a look of where it is. The parking garage is on the Sprint campus. They're talking about putting the stadium inside, you know, those parking garages. I was told about 3 weeks ago or so, maybe at the beginning of this month, maybe late last month, that the Royals have reached out to the Jewish Community Center as well, wondering what it would take to purchase that land away from the Jay as well. Now, I'm told they don't need that land. They kind of just want it to complete the entire, you know, area that they have there. So I know that they've reached out to the Jewish Community Center as well to find out what it is. And I've also been told from multiple sources that representatives from the state of Kansas were down in Arizona. So, I mean, when you're loading up the big people and they're going to Arizona to have these conversations, it's kind of just a matter of, you know, when, not a matter of if anymore.
Okay. So that was yesterday on Fesco and Dusty up there. I think what you have to take away is not that, oh, the Royals are coming to Kansas, Bob Fesco said so. No. If the Royals come to Kansas, it sounds like that is a site that they're narrowing in on. So nothing has been decided. That site, I'm unfamiliar with it. I know it's a famous place in Kansas because of what it's been historically. It looks like Occidental, who is a Wichita company, actually owns that area. I can tell you that one of our reporters followed up with a lawmaker who said they're not to the point where the Royals have made just a great offer on what it is that they're going to do yet. So it's not anything like looming. It's not close to that yet. I think this is more from the Royals side that you're getting this from, and an area that they've honed in on if they come across that would be the area they come. I always sort of just assumed it would be up by the racetrack. But that area up there is interesting. And remember, it already has two star bonds up there between the track and Sporting KC. So I think this would be sort of an untapped area for something like this. Tommy, I don't know this area at all. I don't know if the pictures I see currently existing, like if you put a baseball field into that, if you have to knock down all this other stuff to build, I'm unfamiliar with that area, so I'm not sure. But
yeah. I mean, I think that my biggest takeaway with it is that you're not extremely close to interstate highways at that location. Like, you're probably a mile away from 435, you know, and that's good, but you're not, like, butted up against an interstate. So, you know, there's going to probably be quite a bit of infrastructure work that is going to have to happen if that ends up being the location. And there's already a lot right there. I mean, you know, obviously you've got the Sprint campus and you've got, you know, a lot of other things right in that area. So my guess would be that if that ends up being the location, there's going to be quite a bit of work that's going to have to take place to get it stadium ready.
Who foots the bill for that work then becomes the question, right? Like, what star bonds? Okay, I get all that. That makes sense. I if you've listened to this show, like, I'm a fan of star bonds. I like the idea of them because it doesn't make us in Wichita pay for something that won't benefit us directly. So who pays to do that infrastructure work, though? Is that something the Royals are handling? Is that something?
I mean, I can't imagine that the Royals would handle that. Like, that would be something I would think that the state would have to foot the bill for something like that.
Yeah, I don't like that. I'm not sure that that's going to be the case either, because that's not like that sort of infrastructure to get things out of the way to build your stadium. Like, it's one thing for roads. They say could handle that, but not leveling and, you know, clearing a path and all that. That's all on the road. That's their business. Like, if we're going to give you a tax incentive to build your stadium, that's enough. That's all you get. Like, you're going to get that if we're chipping in. Like, that's all you can have. We've got the money there to help you get the stadium up. All that other stuff that has to happen, that's got to be on the Royals. Like, that, there's a line here where it's got a, you know, not a good enough return, I don't think. And look, the reality on all of this is it almost feels like it's all going to be a practice project to try and lure over the Chiefs, if we're being honest about it. Like, Kansas would love to have the Royals, and the timing would be pretty good, I think, right now to have the Royals. But, that's small potatoes compared to moving the Chiefs over. So this will be fascinating to watch. I don't know where things stand. I don't know that it's like looming or pending or anything like that, but it sure does sound like, based on what Bob Fesco's saying and hearing there, that the conversations are next level conversations, right? They're not just, hey, would you might want to come to Kansas? No, there's real planning being done.
Yeah. And my guess would be that I'm looking at a map right now. My guess would be that we're looking at the northwest corner of that intersection and probably extending from 119th up to like 115th would be my guess on the west side of Nall Avenue, which, you know, there's room there. Like, you could do that. But again, going back to what I said before, you've got to go all the way up to north of 110th Street to get to an interstate. I mean, like, it's going to take a while. So, you're going to have to build out, I would imagine, Nall Avenue, all of the supplemental roads around, because otherwise it would be a nightmare to try to get in and out of that stadium if you're not making the infrastructure better. So is it something that could be done? I mean, sure. I don't know enough about, you know, how to build out, you know, city streets and that sort of thing and parking and everything that goes into that to make a definitive claim. Could it work? Sure. I just think it's going to be a lot of work to get it done.
Yeah, I'm looking at maps and stuff. It's foreign language. I just don't know this area enough at all. But, you know, I think similar to your Braves or a lot of teams, you just go out to the suburbs now for a baseball park. And I don't care. Doesn't matter. I'm sure it'll be great. Like, I trust everybody on that side of it. It's just who pays for what. That's the only thing I care about. And are they actually coming? And it sounds like there are real conversations, right? We've said this a million times. Officials on the Missouri side may be able to convince people to keep the Chiefs and do what it takes, but I don't think they're going to with the Royals. Not unless the city itself gets involved and figures out a way to get them downtown without a public vote. And I just don't think that's going to happen. So then it begs the question, all these details aside, how much do the Royals benefit the state of Kansas? Not as much as the Chiefs. It's an outdoor space. So it's not the same sort of, you know, I think you still get big concerts. I still think you can do a lot of that stuff, but you gotta be careful. Like, the benefit is not the same. You get a whole lot more dates in the summertime than you would for the Chiefs. I think you have to envision it, the timing being good with the Royals being competitive, which I think that part of it is good. But, you know, in order to pay off that star bond, you're going to need them probably to be real good, have a real surge of attendance. And we know, look, I think the risk is probably fine for Kansas because, again, it sort of sets the table for the Chiefs. But you have to have the attendance. And this is a fan base that has shown you they will show up if the team is winning. You go back, and we've done this here. You go back and you look at Major League Baseball attendance and you look in those years where the Royals were finally competitive from about the, you know, second half of 2014 on through, I don't know, 2016, 17, Royals were up in near the top of baseball in attendance. So they'll show up. So that's you're betting a little bit there too. And now you have a front office that's at least telling you and showing you they'll spend money. So the timing has probably never been better for something like this, quite honestly. And we'll see what happens.
Well, there's a reason why opening day on Thursday is sold out, you know, because the fan base is excited to get behind this team, a playoff team with, you know, really exciting stars of, you know, guys that have been around for a while and Salvador Perez and then Bobby Witt Jr., you know, that is the, you know, the face of the organization and could very easily be the face of Major League Baseball. So it's an exciting team. You're striking while the iron is hot. Again, am I willing to, you know, jump out and say, all right, like this is going to happen. Like this is where the team is going. No. But I do think that, yeah, I mean, those conversations continue to be had and knowing all of the issues that have been encountered with trying to find different locations. Remember, it hasn't just been one potential location. It's been multiple locations in the state of Missouri that have not been able to come to fruition. Then, yeah, I mean, I think it does lend credibility to the fact that, you know, it's probably going to be the state of Kansas. I just don't think we fully know exactly what that location is going to be. I'm kind of with you. I'm surprised that it's not closer up to Kansas Speedway in the Legends area, at least, you know, as far as like where the conversations are going now. But I mean, 119th and Nall, again, if you can make that location work from an infrastructure perspective, then I'm on board with that. I think that'd be a perfectly fine location.
Yeah, it kind of comes down to, because if the Chiefs came over, the thought has always been they'd be up there in the Legends. And so then it's like, okay, well, if Kansas could get both of them, is it better to have two different spots? Because now you have two different areas, right, of the state potentially bringing in some revenue, businesses popping up. Might not be a bad thing. I'd really have to dig in on that to know whether it would be more benefit to have everything all in one space or everything or something, you know, kind of spread out. I think having something kind of spread out would certainly help in the Starbond area, because you have two different areas contributing to their own projects instead of everything kind of getting lumped into one area. I'd have to really think about that. I would be intrigued by it. But end of the day, it sounds like that is the area the Royals are focused on, based on what Bob Fesco is reporting yesterday. So again, focus on that part as far as the news item more than the Royals are coming to Kansas, because again, we had a reporter follow up with the lawmaker. That part of it, they've still got a lot of work to do, right? They're still, the Royals still have to come to the table with who's paying for what, like what would that even look like? But as far as where they would come if they came, I think that's the big thing, the big takeaway, the big news item there. Again, I don't know that area, so be as excited or not as excited as you want to be. I'm not sure, but there you go. That was interesting news yesterday.
I think it's good. I mean, I think it's good.
Yeah, it's not bad.
I'm not opposed to having the team in the state of Kansas. You know, I don't think it's a bad thing.
It won't impact my life at all.
Yeah,
I'll tell you that. Yeah, I mean, you're driving to Kansas City.
Well, I mean, I think it'll impact a little bit, because that's closer. I mean, it's a little bit closer of a drive for us, you know, to get up there, yeah, you know, than it would be otherwise. You're probably cutting off
25 minutes.
Yeah, probably cutting off, I was going to say 30, probably cutting off 25, 30 minutes on your drive.
Both ways, if you're doing it down and back, that's not bad. But as far as like the benefits of it to the state, we're not going to feel a lot of that down here. What you feel is the state of Kansas, in which we reside, becomes a more attractive place to come do business, to come live. That does affect us in a positive way. But as far as like the tax or the economic impact of having them up there, we won't feel that down here. It's just getting them over. And look, sometimes that stuff matters. Maybe it adds to the state coffers over time, and adding to the state coffers means property taxes lower to pay for stuff down here when you need, you know, school funding or whatever it is, you know, whatever the deal may be. But it's exciting. I mean, it'd be exciting to have it. And then what was it, Erin Andrews, that caught so much heat in 2014 for saying she was in the state of Kansas when she was in the state of Missouri? Maybe she was just foreshadowing back then that they're headed across. We'll have more to talk about with the Royals here today. Again, we mentioned the Vinny Pasquantino news. We'll touch on that, and then we'll get into some of the things they've been doing offensively and preview their season a little bit in the next hour. So Pasquantino strained his hamstring Saturday.
Yeah.
He's a big dude. Big dudes with soft tissue injuries scares you a little bit. You know, he dealt with injury last year. He had his slow start. Like he had an unfortunate year in a lot of ways last year. And man, when he was back and at full strength, the offense was next level. And I think it's going to be that way if any of those top four are in or out of the lineup, Tommy. And to see him maybe able to go is certainly good news.
You got to have him. I mean, you really do, because the offense is not the same without him. He's the guy that, you know, can help protect Bobby Witt Jr. and can help protect Salvador Perez and be, you know, one of the cogs in the machine that make the offense go for Kansas City. And we all saw the offense drop off significantly at the end of last year when he went down with that injury. And, you know, the Royals, if you'll remember, like limped into the playoffs because largely Vinny Pasquantino was on the shelf. And so being able to get him back in time for opening day, you've got to get off to a hot start. That's a big reason why the Royals were in the position that they were last season, because they got off to a really good start. And you've got to have Pasquantino in that lineup. So, you know, it is encouraging that he's going to take some batting practice today. It's encouraging that he's going to be able to get some work in. We'll have to wait and see if he's going to be ready to go for opening day, which is 48 hours from now. I mean, like, that's a quick turnaround to get him up and get him ready to go for opening day. But they absolutely have to have that production in the lineup. We've seen what happens with that offense when he's not there.
And look, they can play him at DH to start the season. Salvador Perez can play first base. They've got a lot of different things they can do to get him in the lineup. The most important thing is to get him in the lineup. Who plays first in game one when Salvador Perez will almost certainly catch? I don't know. I mean, we'll find out, but if Vinny plays first,
I mentioned him before. I think Mark Canna can play first base. That's a reason why they got him in. Yeah.
If Vinny plays first base on Thursday, I think it's a great sign. I mean, if he's at first on Thursday, he's fine, right? Otherwise, I think the right play is to just kind of let him ease back into it, but keep his bat in the lineup. I was looking at preseason projections just a little bit ago. People cannot figure out and decide and agree on the AL Central. It is like any order of the top four. Nobody agrees on any of it. I get it. And then the White Sox are in fifth, but the Royals need these guys for the one thing they will not have this year is depth, except in the bullpen, which is sort of a comedy from last year, that the fact that they actually have some depth there now, they will not have depth. They don't have depth in the rotation. They don't have depth in the lineup. They're top heavy in both areas, and they've got to stay healthy. So
they've got depth in the rotation. I mean, you could bring in, assuming he's healthy, Alex Marsh or Daniel Lynch, or you've got a couple of other guys that
they have good depth.
But they've got
every team can just put somebody out there, right? Like, oh yeah, well, we've got somebody that we'll throw out there. They don't have good depth. They are very.
I thought Alex Marsh was fine last year. I mean, he can fill in, you know, when needed in that rotation. I think they're okay from a depth position in the rotation. But yeah, in the lineup, like, you've got to. Well, I know, but like when he gets back healthy, I think they've got that in place.
You said the Royals have depth in the rotation. I don't think they do have depth in the rotation. I'm concerned about their depth in the rotation. It was one of the reasons. And again, I've rubber stamped the trade for India now because we saw them add some depth and bring back Michael Lorenzen. And I love their top four, and I love their front four, and I'm willing to give Bubich a shot, even though, you know, it hasn't worked out historically. I'm okay with that. But I don't think they have depth. I think Bubich is a huge question. I think Lorenzen's health has been a question. I think imagining Waka being healthy for an entire season is a question, and they don't have, like, I'm not comfortable with Daniel Lynch or Alec Marsh, maybe, who's already hurt. Like, I think the rotation's going to be tested, and the health of the rotation will be a major storyline for the Chiefs this year, one way or the other.
You mean the Royals? You know,
what did I say? The Chiefs? Yeah, yeah. The Royals.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the rotation, while it has maybe taken a little bit of a step down because they don't have Brady Singer this season, I'm not concerned about the overall success level of the rotation. It's going to be really hard. I think even with Brady Singer, had he stayed with this team, I think it would have been really hard to replicate the success they had last year.
Totally agree.
So, like, I think as long as you take that out of the equation, it's okay to feel fine about the rotation. You don't have to be like, oh, this rotation is going to be incredible, because even with Brady Singer, they were going to be hard pressed to duplicate what they had a year ago. I feel fine about it.
But I don't feel fine about the depth of the rotation. Like, the rotation that they're running out there, I'm okay with that. I mean, starting with Reagans and Lugo and Walker and Lorenzo, like, the rotation's good, but they're like, that's it, right? They're like, they're four deep to me, and then it's real shaky after those four guys. And if you slide Marsh, who is the most proven, I mean, who are the next three? Marsh, Bubich, and probably Daniel Lynch. Like, if you slide Marsh up, now that 450 ERA, if he's, you know, now you're like, yeah, okay. Like, I just think it's very dicey. Now, what gets really interesting to me is all of those pitchers we just mentioned sort of reached innings limits. It reached innings highs last year. Like, they all basically crossed a threshold they had never crossed before. So it will be interesting to see, does that increase their stamina moving forward, or does that weigh on them this year? I think both possibilities kind of exist. I think for Reagan's a young guy, you don't worry too much about that. Lugo and Waka, though, a little older. Lorenzen a little older. Like, yeah, I'm a little worried that last year's innings could wear on them a little bit.
I do think that from a depth position and, you know, being able to figure out, okay, who is going to give us the best opportunity to be able to come in and pitch every fifth day. I mean, clearly they feel like Chris Bubich is that guy. And Daniel Lynch, you know, I think people forget that even though his, you know, there have been a couple times he'd been in the rotation and had started a few games and it wasn't phenomenal, he pitched out of the bullpen really well at the end of last year. And so I think having him, you know, I'm glad that he's in the on the pitching staff on the major league squad to start the season rather than him starting in the minors. And I do think that, you know, they've got some prospects that they can look at if they need additional depth in that rotation. So, you know, I think if we have this conversation in August or September, you know, I think at that point we'll have a better idea. Okay, like this rotation is in good shape. They're healthy. They've been able to get through this season pretty well. Or, yeah, there, you know, if there's a concern about who can fill in if there's an injury or not. But right now, going into the season, I feel okay not only with the guys that they've got in the rotation, but I feel okay about the guys that they need to go to somebody, you know, to be a spot starter, to start a game here and there. I'm okay with who they've got.
Yeah, I mean, spot start, again, I agree with that. Like, but my question becomes, what if any one of the, you know, the three or four miss significant time? Then what do you do? I don't have it. Like, they come into the season with their starting rotation being a strength. So don't, like, I don't want to misrepresent that. I just, if those top four guys miss significant time, now they have two big questions in their rotation. The other part of it, though, is, which is why I got on board with India at the top, is because I think there's almost certainty that the offense will be better. Again, if healthy, but that's always an asterisk in any sporting endeavor. But the offense will almost certainly be better with India at the top of the lineup, with Vinny Pasquantino not going to get, well, with Vinny Pasquantino and MJ Melendez not getting off to as slow a start as they did a year ago, I think there's no chance the offense isn't better if they're all out there together. The bullpen's way better. Like not even in the same stratosphere, better and deeper, which means there'll be less pressure on the starters, which means early in the season, I'm not going to be that surprised if they take it easier on some of the starters. And this is why I hope that Daniel Lynch doesn't enter the rotation. If Daniel Lynch is going to be that kind of pitcher out of the pen, I'd just as rather him be a bullpen guy, right? And maybe at some point a high leverage bullpen guy. But if he's effective there, let him be there. Like let him sit right there and add to a tremendous amount of depth. I mean, they can shorten a game down to five innings with the lead fairly easily now, whether it be some combination of Lynch, Harvey, Ursig, and Estevez. Like, they have four guys back there. Then it's like, okay, well, what is James MacArthur going to give you? Like, they got a ton of arms back there.
But don't you think that lends more credibility to the thought that maybe like a bunch of depth in the rotation they may not even need, because with as good as that bullpen is, they can shorten games. I don't think that you're going to necessarily need to lean on Lugo and Reagans and, you know, a year ago. Like, Lugo threw a lot of innings last year that you don't want to have to duplicate. So they can shorten up games, you would think, in a way that you may not need that kind of depth in the rotation.
I think in a short term, like missing a couple of starts is not what I mean. Yes, I do think they are equipped for somebody else to start games and give them a couple of innings. That part of it, yes. What I don't think they're equipped for is a significant injury to the rotation where a guy goes on and misses, you know, 6, 7, 8, 10 starts because of a serious injury. Whereas last year, we didn't know it at the time, but turns out they had five good starters, right? And if Marsh comes back healthy, that certainly helps, but he's already hurt. And the other thing, like, and I think this is what you see in the betting markets, like, counting on the sort of health they got out of the rotation a year ago just is so unlikely, because it just doesn't happen anywhere in baseball to be able to keep all your starters essentially healthy the entire year. Like, that just doesn't happen. So that's where you have to look at this other stuff. You hope any missed time is short term. But, you know, it's something to watch as we're trying to dissect the team. Flip around to the other side on the offense. One of the Royals sports information people, director of media relations, put this out yesterday. the Roy, get this, Tommy. This was before games were played yesterday, so I don't know if it held true through the action yesterday. The Royals' offense this spring, first in runs per game, first in total bases, first in batting average, first in on-base percentage, first in OPS, first in slugging. These are, like, this is, look, I get it. Like, spring is weird. Guys play different places, and they go, but that sort of thing, like, when it's all of it, they've basically been the best at everything offensively this spring. That's what you drool over when you imagine a good leadoff hitter in this offense.
Yeah, I'm not.
Those top four guys, yeah. I'm telling you, it's just like on paper, it's near perfect.
I mean, obviously the big question then becomes, can they carry that over into games that actually matter? And sure. Will that be a drop off after the top four? Like, will you see what we saw a season ago where that production from the top four guys falls off a cliff? In the bottom half of the lineup. That's been my, I know your concern throughout this entire offseason has been the rotation and having the rotation be as good as it was a year ago. My major concern has been, what does that lineup look like the second half of the lineup? Once you get through the top four, will we see production from Renfro and Melendez and Massey and like some of those other guys? You know, because they've got the top four shored up, assuming Vinny Pasquantino's health, but having Jonathan India kick things off is fantastic. But I've been concerned all along about the second half of the lineup, but at least the way that this entire lineup has performed in spring training, that does give me some optimism.
Yeah, I think it's a concern. I think there's going to be regression both directions this year. And so regression can be positive or negative, right? Like regression is more toward like the norm. I think the starting pitching is likely to regress down a bit from the near, like from the absolute everybody hit their ceiling season they had a year ago. So I sort of expect that a little bit. And then the other way, like positive regression for so many players in the lineup, I think is inevitable too. Baseball's always been a game of averages, right? The chances that Melendez, the chances that Renfro and all those guys have the sort of start they had last year, I think are low enough that I think you're going to see the lineup naturally law of averages get a little bit better and the starting rotation law of averages not be nearly as, near perfect as they were a year ago. I think both of those things will happen. And so you get sort of like a wash effect for me. That's where the bullpen comes in. That's the one where, like, there's almost no chance they're worse, right? Like, they changed too much. Like, they totally redid the bullpen. So while those other two things might balance out a little bit, which is okay, right? I think that will be all right. It's the bullpen that almost certainly will be better no matter how you look at it. And I think that's the big difference. When we talk about this team being really talented and why aren't they getting enough respect? That's the place that I'm looking as much as anything else is their biggest flaw last year was their bullpen. And they are so much better at this point of the season. Now, they got quite a bit better by the end of it through the trade deadline. But at this point of the season last year, remember how bad that bullpen was and how much better it is now. So if you're looking for room to jump up and win the division, I think that's where you start.
Well, it got even
better they are there.
It got even better down the stretch than it was in May, you know, or
that's
June.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, right? Like, you know, going and getting Ursig and all of that.
Last year to start the year versus the bullpen
sure.
Now.
Yeah.
I mean, it is like, not only did they not have Harvey or Ursig, or like they have Harvey and they have Ursig, and we know Daniel Lynch has been effective, and they added Estevez, who's been an effective closer. Like they have four more arms than they did last year that are all better than anything they had last year.
I mean, they were crossing their fingers and toes and anything else that they could cross that James MacArthur wouldn't blow games every time they trotted him out there. And now they've got so many other options. And the best part about it, like to my point a minute ago, it's not just options to close out games. They've got options to shorten games in the fifth or sixth or seventh inning. So many different guys that you can lean on. That bullpen from top to bottom, it may be one of the best in baseball.
Could be. I mean, Ursig is an absolute weapon when they can deploy him the way they're going to, which is just high leverage, put him in. Right? It's not a closer thing. It's just like high leverage, put him in. It's as valuable as it gets. All right, we'll come back. We're going to talk a little college hoops. We're going to talk a little Chiefs. Stick with us. Sports Daily on the other side.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It's Sports Daily, another hour with you here on KFH, 97.5 FM, 1240 AM. You can call us at 869-1240. You can get in touch with us on our video streams. Thanks for watching us on 12 News Connected and Facebook and YouTube and X. Thanks for listening to us on the Odyssey app as well. Tommy, something yesterday, we got some people fired up on the old video streams that, you know, I'm taking issue with this silly narrative, we'll call it, that this has been a tournament. Oh, NIL's killing Cinderella's and I just can't believe. Are you buying any of that? Have you felt that way?
No, I haven't. And honestly, I didn't even realize until I started looking at the Sweet 16 teams that really the only, I guess, Cinderella team is Arkansas as a 10 seed. I didn't even really realize that. I've had a good time with this tournament. I've actually really liked it. I've really liked the games and the teams that are in there. And I don't know. I mean, like, yeah, you don't have representation, you know, from like a mid-major or anything like that in the Sweet 16. But at least in my opinion, it has not changed my viewing experience at all.
I mean, and, you know, you got to go all the way back to like 2017 for the last time that we saw something like this. I don't get it. Like, we just come off of a couple of years ago where we had like a 5, a 6, an 8, and a 4 in the Final Four. Guess what? That was during the transfer portal era, the NIL era. Like, why are we massively overreacting to a season and a tournament that is going the way we all thought it was going to go? How many times have we talked this year about not being like some true juggernaut? It feels like there's about 15, 20 teams that could legitimately win a national title. Like, this Sweet 16 is so representative of this season. And then you have to bring in history. And this is what really aggravates me. Like, to sit there, and I'm not talking about just like water cooler stuff. The problem has been we haven't had all the buzzer beaters. So you haven't had like the double digit true Cinderellas getting those wins. But the reality of this tournament is those teams don't ever do anything anyway. You've had three teams ever in the history of this tournament, almost 40 years, three teams that have been a 6, a 7, and an 8 seed. Every other year to win a national championship, they've been 4 seeds or better. Every single year. Cinderellas do not win this tournament. Cinderellas rarely even reach the Final Four. True Cinderellas. Kansas was a 6 seed in 88. UConn was a 7 seed in Kemba Walker's year. And in the very first year of the tournament, Villanova was an 8 seed in 1985 when they won it. Every other year, you've had basically a top 15 team going into the tournament win the national championship. This is exactly what always happens in this tournament. Always.
Yeah, I think people really like the novelty of a Cinderella upsetting one of the favorites like early on. But then when like push comes to shove and you're in the Elite Eight or you're in the Final Four, like you want to see the best teams in the country, you know, at least I do, want to see them battle it out to win a national championship. Like, I don't know, is this better than just like a year ago and watching UConn run through everybody? Because I think this is way better than watching a.
I thought you were going to go 2 years ago.
No, yes, like watching UConn just like they go into every game and you know they're just going to win. you know they're going to beat everybody. Yeah. So it's almost like the other games don't really matter. Like, why do we have these other teams in here? Why are we doing this? Why are we playing these other games? Because UConn was just, like, so freaking good. I would take this any day of the week. What we've had this year so far and the teams that are still standing in the Sweet 16, because it really is almost anybody's game with the 16 teams that are left. And, you know, like the teams that everybody has been salivating over all year long are still in play. You've got your Duke and your Florida, your Houston, yeah, Auburn. Like, you've got the all four number one seeds are still there. Three of the four number two seeds are still there. These are the best teams in America. And I think it's so much better than at least what we had a season ago.
I do too. And I'm not going to say it's better than what we had two seasons ago when you had like sevens, eights, and nines. I guess, like, for me, unless you're going to consider Gonzaga a Cinderella, or Butler when they made the tournament like six straight years and back-to-back national championships. By the way, the first of those two, they made it in. They were a five seed. If that's a Cinderella for you, then yes, we're missing that. But that's not a Cinderella for me. A Cinderella for me is a team that had to win a conference tournament to get into the tournament. I mean, that's as simply as I can define it. Like, a team that's not in if they don't win a conference tournament. And even then, like, you got to go back. Like, there have been years like Syracuse got in and made a run. Like, yeah, they were an 11, but are we like, as if maybe you can call that a Cinderella? I think you could make a case for
it. It's kind of like calling Arkansas and John Calipari a Cinderella, right, as a 10.
Is that a Cinderella this year? No. I mean, I don't think it is, but I think we could think of that team that way. I'd be okay with that. They're not going to win a title, I don't think, but they could. I mean, they're the best shot. If you're looking at it that way, that's as good a shot as we've ever had, because now they're all of a sudden they're healthy, right? And they have that coach. But no, what is the Cinderella? We talked about that a little bit, but this tournament is going the way they all go, right? When you get down to this point of the tournament, those teams almost never make it this far, and they never make it. We've never had a double-digit team make a national championship game. Never. 40 years of data now. So let's stop. That's not even the part that bothers me. What bothers me is real college basketball people, college sports people in the you know, out there where their opinions matter, trying to say that NIL and the transfer portal are ruining our tournament because we don't have them. Like, what does that even mean? I would say, when was the last time you felt like, and to start a Sweet 16, that you felt like it's as wide open as it is this year? Maybe you've got Duke as a heavy favorite. I think they're certainly I think they're the favorite, but I don't think they're a heavy favorite. And I've still got Houston winning it all. But it's as wide open to me as it's ever been going into the Sweet 16. So yeah, maybe there were one or two fewer buzzer beaters in the opening two rounds. But man, I'd put a lot of money that says these games in the Sweet 16 are fantastic.
There were fantastic round of 32 games on Saturday and Sunday.
Yes,
they were really, really good ones. That Maryland game, the Maryland-Colorado State game, the buzzer beater from Derek Queen, he might have traveled, but it was great. I was really like leaning heavily on Colorado State.
How good was Houston Gonzaga?
That was a great basketball game. It was a high level basketball game. You know, the Texas Tech Drake game was phenomenal too. Like, there were really, really good round of 32 games. And, you know, I would say that the people that are leaning on this narrative of NIL and the transfer portal killing college basketball, it's a lazy narrative. They didn't watch the games. They might have watched a couple of the games in the round of 64, but they didn't watch any of the games on Saturday or Sunday. I would venture to guess they're not going to watch the games Thursday and Friday and this weekend. Like, these are high-level basketball games with the top programs in America. It's a lazy narrative. There wasn't a single time when I was watching basketball, whether it was inside Intrust Bank Arena or at home over the weekend, that I thought, man, just the caliber of play is not good now that NIL is here.
I
can't even watch this game. This isn't fun. Like, that's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Now, that you can, and I'll say this too, as the transfer portal opened and like 800 players entered it yesterday, nobody's going to sit here and say you shouldn't be annoyed at the transfer portal. We're all annoyed at the transfer portal, right? Is it, whether it's the right or the wrong thing morally is different than whether it annoys us. It annoys all of us. Like literally everybody that watches is annoyed by the transfer portal. I can promise you that. That doesn't mean though it's ruining anything. It's, and it hasn't even really changed it. We've had like the, go, just go look at the last four tournaments. They've all been wildly different from each other. This one happens to be, I think, representative that we have a collection of really good teams. And it has felt like it's been that way all year up through about the top 20. And I think that's exactly what we've seen now play its way through. Are you going to have 3 and 4 year players playing it like they're mid-major forever? I don't know. When FAU went the next year, Tommy, they brought all three of their best players back. Those guys didn't leave until Dusty May left, right? So I think we try to oversimplify things and draw conclusions off of a very small sample size. And if you blow it up, like that just is not backed up by history at all, at all. And this is going to be a great Sweet 16. I am as excited about this collection of teams as any other I've ever been, because I legitimately feel like any of these teams could win a national championship, or at least could win the next game that they play. And that is wild. That does not happen every year in this tournament. And that's really cool that it is that way.
I mean, what was it, a year ago when NC State made that run, or 2 years ago when NC State made that run? Last year. And which, by the way, their coach, you know, obviously was let go after this year. So like things change pretty quickly in college basketball. But like, you've got years where there's the 8 seed and the 5 seed and they're playing in the Sweet 16. And I'm like, is that really must see TV? Like, it's cool that they won. It's cool that they made it that far. But like, I don't like, I'd rather see like that Houston Gonzaga game that we watched over the weekend,
but
right?
Sometimes you don't have to define. Remember Sister Jean and how she captivated? Yeah. Like, that's great stuff too. Like, it all, but it's all great. Like, just let this tournament be this tournament. You know what I mean? Like, we don't have to draw conclusions about the end of the world about from one tournament. Last year's tournament was totally different. 2 years ago, the tournament was insane. Those were all existing in NIL and the transfer portal, by the way. So just let them be. We're going to come back. We'll talk Chiefs. We might touch on this further into the hour. But Chiefs talk next. Don't go away. More Sports Daily.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH. And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
And welcome back in, everybody, to Sports Daily. We are glad to be joined by our Chiefs Insider, Felix Johnson. Felix, how's your bracket?
Oh, it's going all right. I mean, I hate to say it, but I am kind of a subscriber to, if you're elite, I kind of believe in you a little bit more. So, I mean, Duke, go ahead, win the national title. I mean, I like it when blue bloods win championships, and KU definitely won one of them this year. So, or one of those contenders this year. So I like Duke this year, and I've always been a John Shire fan, taking over after Coach K. So here we go.
Okay. All right. That's not, I mean, they're the favorite right now. It's not, it's, but it should be good. It should be good. All right. Let's talk Chiefs. This feels like the first, Well, no, it's not the, I was going to say it's the first time we haven't had a massive news break in the time we haven't talked to you over the week, but that's not true either because Charles Minnehue's back.
Yeah.
That feels large. We've been, what, like, where's all this money coming from?
Well, and that's a question that I think I've asked more for the Philadelphia Eagles over the last couple of years, because they have two of the top receivers in the league. They have a top flight quarterback contract, at least. All those defenders have a bunch of different contracts that they're going to be getting paid to with the young Georgia players that they've drafted over the last couple of years. Where's the money coming from? I mean, the NFL keeps upping the cap space every single year, $30 million more coming in this year. And then Charles Omenihu, him specifically, we talked about him towards the end of the year, him coming back from the injury in the playoffs, how big of a factor he was going to be. Maybe not the sack numbers. He's not going to be your double digit, excuse me, sack guy like George Karlaftis was this past year. But he is a high pressure percentage guy, which in today's NFL is almost as important as your legitimate sack numbers. And so, I mean, again, the Chiefs are still in that win now mode, especially not completing the three-peat. That has something, some type of hunger within them. And I think that works from the front office all the way down to the players like Charles Omenihu, who hasn't had that moment in a Super Bowl like most Chiefs have over the last couple of years.
Well, it's not just Charles Omenihu, but also, of course, we know Jerry Tillery signs a one-year deal with the Chiefs for their defensive line. And then in the last 24 hours, the Chiefs bring back Mike Pinnell. That move, the Pinnell move, was not overly surprising to me because they've got so much experience with him on that roster. And, you know, he hadn't found a home up to this point. But definitely reinforcements on the defensive line, that's been a priority over the last week or so.
Absolutely. And I think that's always been kind of not necessarily a hole, but just somewhere where the Chiefs have been lacking a little bit. Obviously, Chris Jones is going to beg a lot of double teams. And even then, he's not as, how do I say this, energetic on every single play that he could be, especially in run defense. And so a second defensive tackle like a Mike Pinnell stepping in and being kind of that run stopper, that guy that can get off a block and make a tackle in the backfield like we saw in last year's Super Bowl against the 49ers. And so I think if Jerry Tillery can come in and be another guy in that rotation in the middle of that defense where Derek Nnadi has been in, has been in the past, having guys in the middle of the defense that are not necessarily giving you something that Chris Jones can't, but giving you something that Chris Jones can't.
Well, okay. So two of those guys, Tillery you mentioned, and Omenihu, what is the need at the draft now? Like what, like we thought, okay, defensive line depth, but that was before I thought Omenihu was coming back. So now if Omenihu's back, I mean, that's kind of the return of the defensive line. Like, are we in true best player available? Is there a clear need on this team? Maybe it's left tackle again. Like, and all that being said, like, if there was ever a year that the Chiefs loved a player and wanted to trade up and go get him, especially at left tackle, this would be the year to do it. They don't have it. They don't go into this draft with clear needs. They have depth needs. I get it. McDuffie may leave. I get all that. Mm-hmm. But man, if you finally wanted to make a long-term solution somewhere, I feel like this is the year you could do it.
I think left tackle would be an interesting spot to see if they were going to do that had they not made the Moore signing earlier this offseason. Now, we've talked about it a handful of times. Outside of Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith kind of a fluke being in the sixth round, not even a fluke. He was a first-round talent and fell down to the sixth round because of his heart condition coming out in his draft year. But they haven't really drafted tackles well. Exactly. I mean, the Kingsley Sewell-Mataia 1 year, we'll see. Hopefully that progresses forward at one spot or another, right tackle, guard, one of the guard spots. You look at Darian Kennard, Wanye Morris. There's like three or four guys that they've drafted over the last probably 4 years that just haven't cracked into the lineup. They've still had to go sign Jawan Taylor, trade for Orlando Brown Jr. They've had to still draft guys year after year at the same position to try and solve that same question over the last couple years. And so I'm not exactly sure if the Chiefs feel confident in saying we can find our left tackle answer in the draft unless they were to trade up. But even then, there's not that many tackles that they can wait for, like Josh Connerly at 31. And so it might be a best player available. We've talked about it a handful of times where I think they can go get an offensive weapon to really point away from Travis Kelce as a focus point of this offense. And so there's a lot of different options that the Chiefs have in the early rounds of the draft. But I think it's hard pressed for me to say, yeah, go ahead and spend it on another tackle after we've seen you guys it not work out four or five times in the last 4 years.
you know, usually having a conversation about a backup offensive lineman is, you know, not the most important thing in the world. But in the last 24 hours, the Chiefs have re-signed Mike Caliendo to come back on a one-year deal, $3 million or so for the season. And, you know, he started at left guard when Joe Tooney was moved over to left tackle for a portion of last season. I know with the Jalen Moore signing, and then, you know, I think they still feel really good about Kingsley Suamataia at left guard. But in your mind, how important is it to have a depth piece like a Mike Caliendo back on the roster?
Oh, it's huge. You're talking to a former offensive lineman, so I think having as many quality players at that position is only beneficial. You see it in the NFL nowadays, and especially with how the surging back that the run game has had in Philadelphia and Detroit, like Buffalo. I think they use the sixth offensive lineman the most out of anybody in the league. Dan Skipper has become a legitimate celebrity, and he's a backup tackle for the Lions. And so I think that having another player that can step in like the Chiefs needed in Caliendo this year is huge. It's almost as important, and perhaps more important, because they actually get on the field sometimes than a backup quarterback, because you have some more versatility. If you can throw in a Dan Skipper to on the edge of your line and run the ball that way and be incredibly effective, or you have an injury or something like the Chiefs had and Joe Tooney having to switch over and Caliendo stepping in. So I think that a sixth offensive lineman is growing in value, maybe not more than a backup quarterback strictly off the position, but it's growing in value over the last couple of years because of what we're seeing in these last few teams that have been really, really successful.
All right, put your general manager hat on here, Felix.
It's always on.
I'm gonna give you a choice: long term deal for George Karlaftis, long term deal for Trent McDuffie. You can only have one.
Trent McDuffie. It's pretty simple. I wouldn't say that getting double digit sacks is easy, but having a sack every other game would get you about there, and that's where George Karlaftis was this year, and that's nowhere near being an elite pass rusher, which is the money that he might be begging when the time comes. We already know, and we've talked about this, we already know that Trent McDuffie is elite. He's one of the top, at the very least, four corners in the NFL. You got to pay a guy like that, especially if you drafted him in the first round. It only makes sense to sign a guy like that. In the same case of George Karlaftis at a premium position like defensive end, but he may not beg the same amount of cash. That there's a bunch of defensive ends that you can find. Like you went out and found Charles Omenihu. I'm not saying you can do the same thing again and have just as effective of a player, but you can have a very you can find your way if you were to let George Karlaftis walk. Letting Trent McDuffie walk, there's only like two or three other guys like him in the NFL.
Let me ask you this. When you look at the draft and you look at the potential players and positions and that sort of thing of need for Kansas City when it comes to them, is there a scenario where this team can get better this season? Or is it going to be, in your mind, more of a long-term play, more of a developmental type thing? Or is there a player or a few players out there that can immediately impact the Chiefs next season?
That's what's kind of interesting with the Chiefs, is that, yes, it's both. Because with Xavier Worthy, it was, all right, he's the fastest player we've ever seen. He can help the Chiefs obviously out right now, but he became the Chiefs' number one receiver by the end of the year because of injuries and obviously development. But that's what we look at when we're looking at Chiefs' weapons, at least offensively, is it's a hard playbook to learn. Can you develop throughout the season like we saw Rashee Rice do, like we've seen Xavier Worthy do, like we've seen a handful of different players do, even just new veterans coming to the team? And so I think it is a long-term situation where by year two, you're actually the player that you could have been year one any other place. But at the same time, you're probably playing in the Super Bowl and maybe even winning it because you're a Kansas City Chief and Patrick Mahomes is your quarterback. So I think that in this particular draft, the only way that they can have players – affect them for 2025 would be drafting heavily offensively, because we've talked about it. Who's going to fit on this defense? They've signed a handful of defensive linemen. They brought back Nick Bolton. The secondary is still full of the young guys that they drafted in 2022. Offensively, you have receivers that you need. You probably need to grab another running back. There's some offensive line issues. So everything's pointing to you drafting offense. Defense is cool. You need to help your quarterback now.
Yeah, Tommy and I disagreed on offense. Felix Johnson, our Chiefs insider, joining us. We disagree on where the offense is going in, like, you know, regardless of who they draft. Like, if we just look at it right now, I am of the camp that I think the offense is better than it was a year ago for the majority of the season because it's healthy. Tommy thinks it's going to be more kind of the same. Where do you fall with where things sit offensively right now as compared to last year when it was a pedestrian offense?
I would say ask me again after this draft, because the only thing that was going to truly change with this team, and the only thing that has changed with this team from when it was an elite offense in 2022 when they beat the Eagles in the Super Bowl, was that last year was Eric Bieniemy being a part of this team. And now he's not. Matt Nagy's still there. I mean, I don't know. He obviously doesn't call plays like Bieniemy did it. He got a head coaching job off of not calling plays and then calling plays. And so what does Matt Nagy do? I don't know, but the offense is clearly worse, and there's only really one piece that's different. We're well beyond the point of them probably letting Matt Nagy walk, and he's probably never going to lose his job unless he gets another head coaching job, or it'll be a situation where his contract runs out or something like that. So I think that, I mean, honestly, he might be the next head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs in the next couple of years. But I think that that's the biggest point of change that we've seen for the Chiefs. Where can they go other than that? All right, now you got to get a bunch of different offensive pieces, whether it be your running backs or Luther Burden in the first round or whatever the case may be. I think that that's the only change that they can make is personnel-wise, is improving that. Other than that, you can't really fire Matt Nagy in March.
Yeah, I mean, and that is actually, that's a big part of my point going into this season, is that it's less about personnel. I don't think that they're going to be able to do anything of major significance personnel-wise offensively that will impact them right away. It's got to be more from a playbook perspective, right? It's got to be more a situational type thing with the schemes and the way that they're drawing up the offense, because, you know, you've got the best quarterback in the league. You've got a ton of weapons around him. They should not be a league average offense. And they were a season ago. And I know they were dealing with injuries and all of that, but every team in the NFL deals with injuries. I think that you've got to almost look more at, okay, how do we deploy these weapons in a better way this upcoming season, as opposed to we need to continue to try to add more weapons?
Well, I think, and some of it is Andy Reid's perhaps the greatest coach of all time and one of the greatest offensive coaches of all time for sure. He's a little stubborn. I mean, there's just certain things that the Chiefs just will or will not do because, guess what? Andy Reid doesn't want to do them. Whatever the case may be, whether it's running the football until the fourth quarter and, like, the last third of the season, they refused to run the football. And that was partially because Isaiah Pacheco and Kareem Hunt, and who do you want to give the ball 20 times or 25 times a game? Neither one, really. But at the same time, it's just the Chiefs are incredibly stubborn for whatever reason. And well, I guess – because it's worked. They've won Super Bowls and been incredibly successful. But at this point, where you saw it in this year's Super Bowl, finally, bombs over the top started working, and it was way too late for it to figure it out, and it was the fourth quarter of the last game of the year. And so I think kind of leaning into what worked for them late in the Super Bowl next year will probably help them in the long run, post-Travis Kelce, post-Andy Reid, post-in the next couple years, because this is a thing that can go on longer than just these last couple years and the next two. And so I think that's somewhere where the Chiefs aren't looking right now. And that's fine because they've played in the last three Super Bowls and they could play in the next one and win it. So it's the Chiefs being stubborn, but for a good reason. And that's just,
yeah. And maybe we're all saying the same thing with different ways to get there, because if play calling's going to change, having Rashi Rice and a healthy Hollywood Brown and a healthy Isaiah Pacheco and a developed Xavier Worthy is going to allow them to do some different things than they could for the largest chunk of last year when they didn't have any of those guys. And they brought in DeAndre Hopkins in a snap and tried to get him acclimated, and all of these things that they had to pivot to last year. It certainly limited their play calling, but yes. I think they get to walk into this year if those guys are healthy, and this off it almost has to be better because they've got all their guys.
Strictly off of being a complete lineup change. I mean, effectively, Hollywood Brown had one snap before he got hurt as a Kansas City Chief before he played towards the end of the year, and so I think that you're right in the effect of, like, they're just gonna have guys that have been around the team for a little bit longer. they're going to have them week one, presumably with Hollywood Brown, Xavier Worthy, and then whatever happens with Rashee Rice's situation. So, like, I agree on that notion. To me, it's just that I believe that going into this past year too. What happened? The offense was kind of boring until after Rashee Rice got hurt, particularly, but that's partially because of the injuries. And so, I mean, to me, the only change that can happen would be at the offensive coordinator position, because that was the only change that has happened since they were an elite offense. I mean, the only real change that has happened since they were an elite offense.
They ain't going to change that right now, but I'm with you.
I'll keep screaming into the abyss.
You said Matt Nagy is going to be the next head coach of the Chiefs, and
I don't like it. Here's the thing. Matt Nagy, I don't think he ever gets the credit as a head coach that he properly deserved. I mean, he took the Bears to the playoffs twice with Mitchell Trubisky. That's worth something. And so, I mean, maybe he's a better head coach than we remember, but obviously he's not doing something right.
Maybe, but it could get anybody excited. We'll see.
I'm not willing to go down that path of Matt Nagy as my head coach.
I wouldn't be happy about it. I'm just saying.
Andy Reid's gonna coach forever. As long as there are cheeseburgers and plays to draw, Andy Reid will coach forever.
I think he's running out of plays to draw, though. That's the problem.
Yeah, no, he'll pull something out of what he saw in the Division III championship game, and they'll work it in and implement it, you know, in training camp. That's how they roll. All right, Felix, find Felix's work on at Arrowhead Addict. You can follow him on social, Felix R. Johnson on social, Field Vision, Arrowhead Addict, all the places. Check it out. We appreciate it. Always something good to talk about with the Chiefs.
Appreciate you guys. Have a good one.
There goes Felix Johnson. We'll do more draft stuff and get specific into players and lean into Felix for that. I don't have the time or the energy to study much outside of like the first round, maybe the first two rounds, Tommy, or players we just happen to see anymore. Those days have passed me. Not a mock drafter. I was when I was, you know, in college, I was into it. Didn't have anything else to do. Thanks for Felix Johnson stopping by. If you missed any of that on the Chiefs talk there or the Chiefs Insider, you can go back and listen on the Odyssey app for it. We'd invite you to do that. Good stuff. I don't know what they're going to do. Wide open on what they could do in the draft. I still think pass rusher is the most likely, but they can do anything, which is always a position of strength in a draft, right? As we watch you guys talked about the offense, all these running backs, I hope they can get a back with some juice in there to mix in. Maybe Elijah Mitchell can be that. I know Kareem Hunt's the safety net to Pacheco, but that explosive back would be a nice addition to the offense. But they can do anything they want. I mean, they're in a position of strength now.
Yeah, I'm leaning more and more to pass rush. I mean, that's kind of where I live right now, I think they need to go in the first round. You know, just because
aren't we cooking in that we just don't think Karloftis is coming back?
Yeah, we don't know. I mean, we obviously don't know. You need a contingency plan on if he's not back. And, you know, then also, we've talked about it before, the Felix and Udike Uzama draft, you know, that didn't play out particularly well. Like, he's still on the team, but he hasn't taken that step forward that I think that everybody, you know, wanted him to. So you need to have more depth there. You need to have a playmaker there. And I think that this would be an opportunity to go and get somebody like that.
No question about it. I have not seen, as we check in, and we'll have to do this, and I'm not looking forward to it. My least favorite thing about the transfer portal is trying to keep up with the transfer portal. I haven't seen anything of significance. We'll have Shreyas Lotta in later this week, which will be very nice to let him sort of catch us up. I know he put out yesterday sort of a very likely return, and on that list was Flory Badunga. On that list was Jamari McDowell and Marco Jackson, who we sort of forgot about this year, honestly. So that's something of significance. Bill Self talked about it, and, you know, he's always candid, and we'll see. We'll try to keep up. We'll do the best that we can with the portal, but it is an impossible task to know who's in, who's out. Like, it's just insane. So that's also out there. And then, of course, we've got K-State women with significant news that we mentioned off the top of the show. Juju Watkins tore ACL last night for USC. The door is wide open for the K-State women now in their attempt to reach a Final Four. You know, they've kind of had the opposite. They've been banged up. Now they're finally healthy, I think. and then something like that, the best player in college basketball leaves with an injury. Okay, like, here we go. And I say the best player. There's lots of great players. One of the best players in college basketball on the women's side. So K-State's women have an opportunity. That line still isn't out, by the way. I've been checking for those that might be interested in that. Let's talk more about the men's tournament, Tommy. We got into this off the top. I'm glad you're with me. I'm glad you're with me because you'd have thought I'd said that, you know, the sky is green yesterday when I said that I think this Cinderella thing is way overblown and that NIL's ruined. Like, this tournament has been such a perfect way to look back on this season. We have never known who that, like, once it became clear that it was again not going to work for Kansas, and that was your preseason number one. I think Duke is certainly the closest thing to a team who can make a dominant run through the next, what would it be, four games? But I think that's unlikely. I still like Houston. I think Florida looked a little flawed. Was that their bad game? And if it was, they've got a great chance. But it's not just like those ones. I don't like Auburn. Tommy, you can make a case. You can make a case for everybody right now in that tournament. Every team. You could see a path. There are some that are less likely, but they're not impossible. Like, this is really good stuff. And it's perfect for what we've seen all season long. Are you going to tell me that Alabama, that Texas Tech, that Maryland, that Arizona don't have a chance?
Michigan Ole Miss, State?
Chris Beard, Kentucky, Michigan.
Tom Izzo? Like, what are we doing here?
Here's what I'll tell you. I don't think Purdue has a chance. I think BYU has a chance to win some games, but I'll say it's unlikely that they win as many as it will take down the stretch. I think Arizona's got a tall order, and that's probably it. I think Michigan can absolutely beat Auburn. So I don't know. I mean, maybe those are the least likely. Purdue and BYU are probably the least likely for me. But BYU is unique in what it does that we've talked about a billion times. Like, they can outshoot anybody, and it's not like they need to play their best game to outshoot anybody. It's kind of what they do. But they're so Jekyll and Hyde. Seeing them do it at this level now, four games in a row, is probably less likely. And Purdue, I'm just not giving enough credit, but I'm not going to give them enough credit.
There's not a single team out of the 16 that I don't think could find a way to win a national championship. Of course, you're obviously going to have teams that are more likely than others, but right. There's not a single team that you look at. Like, and I know, you know, we were going back and talking about all of these different Cinderella teams and all of that. You know, you bring up Sister Mary and Loyola Chicago and, like, you know, all, like,
Sister Jean.
Whatever. What did I say? Sister
Mary.
Sister Jean. Sister. Whatever. Loyola
Twisted Sister.
Loyola Chicago was not going to win a national championship, right? Like, they weren't going to do it. They weren't going to win it. But, like, there's not a single team on this list in this 16 that could not find a path to win a national championship.
And I agree.
So that's why, like, yeah, like, I'm having a lot of fun watching this tournament. And I think the Sweet 16 round is going to be phenomenal. I think the Elite Eight round is going to be phenomenal. There's not a dud, in my opinion, as far as matchups are concerned from here on out.
Oh, I don't think so either. And here's the thing. While I think it's less likely that BYU or Purdue could make it all the way through, I absolutely think both of them could win their next game. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if I think they can do it enough times in a row, but they would, if you put them up against any other team in the tournament, they can absolutely win that game. And that's what, you know, that is where this becomes really challenging. Like, I'm happy with my bracket now, having the four ones in, even though I've never really liked Auburn. They're 8.5-point favorites against Michigan. Like, I never really liked Auburn, but their path was really solid to me. Houston, who I love, has, now that they got through Gonzaga there, an interesting matchup here, but they play Tennessee. Houston and Tennessee? Come on now. Like, you want to talk about defense on display. Duke gets to potentially play Alabama. Well, no matter who Duke plays in their next two games, it's going to be Shootout City. It's going to be Shootout City with BYU in the first time, and then Arizona, and then whether it's BYU or Alabama, Shootout City, no matter what.
How about the fact that, by the way,
Duke-Arizona line's only at 153?
Oh, I'm hammering the over on that for sure.
I think so, yeah. Right?
How cool is it, by the way, that you had three major, I mean, there were more than just these three, but three major coaching changes during the offseason. You have John Calipari go to Arkansas. You have Mark Pope go to Kentucky. You have Kevin Young go to BYU, all in a line, and all three of those teams made the Sweet 16 this year.
And how about this? Speaking of BYU, Wyatt Thompson told us yesterday that he thinks BYU may be the favorite going into next year. Like if we were talking about the Big 12 and what it might look like, that's how high he is on what they've got cooking. Here's my favorite line of maybe college basketball this year. And I want to know what you're going to do with it. BYU Alabama right now, over 175. 175. That means 88 to 85 doesn't cover it.
Yeah.
Right? 175.
As much as I love BYU, as much as I think that there's going to be a lot of scoring, I don't think you can take the over in that, right? Like, I think you have to take the under.
So it's so I'm trying to do the math here. So it's a 5.5-point spread. With that, you're looking at an implied total here of essentially like 91 to 85. That's what kind of game Vegas sees that being. No, you can't take the over.
I don't think, yeah, no, you can't take the over.
A college basketball game betting on an over like that. There's no, you just can't do that. But man, you want to talk about a fun matchup? And there are these kinds of like fun matchups. How about the opposite end of that? You know what the over under on the Houston Purdue game is right now?
150.
132.
Holy cow.
Yeah. So you're looking at, an implied total there of 70 to 63 ish, 71 to 63, basically. That's the kind of like, that's why I love this Sweet 16 though. Like I love this Sweet 16. You've got some teams that do different stuff, but they're all good. And how does that battle itself out? I can tell you the early lines I do like. I like Tech -5.5. I love Florida -6.5. Those are my two favorites right now. And I kind of like, Michigan +8.5 maybe. But here we go. Like, give me Thursday. What time do the games start Thursday? I mean, when do we first get the action? 6 o'clock, yeah. Right? Yeah, 6:30, 8:39, those four games.
How are you going to balance?
Injected into my veins.
How are you going to balance a Sweet 16 and opening day of Major League Baseball? Like, it's the same day.
Well, because opening day of Major League Baseball for most teams is at 3 o'clock. So, or earlier in the day. So, like, the Rangers and the Royals, like, get them at 3 o'clock. I know that's what time the Royals play. I think that's what time the Rangers play. And then you just go right into college basketball. You and I Thursday, shout out to Crestview Country Club for being great supporters of the program. Don't we have like wine or something?
I think
on
you
Thursday?
Do. I think you guys are doing a wine tasting.
Oh, you're not going
to
be.
I got to watch college basketball. Like you're going to go to a wine tasting. Too. I'm going to watch college basketball.
I didn't think about that. But the good news about Crestview though is they'll have it on. So I'll watch it, or I'll just be totally absent from the conversations my wife is trying to make me have watching college basketball. Coming from Major League Baseball. Shout out to Crestview. We appreciate their support. Cool events like wine tastings, beer tastings, all of that stuff. Give them a call. Go check out the facilities. They just sent an email, by the way. They're taking all the members' input on how they do like their entire calendar of events, which is going to get totally retooled this year, which is just one of the things I never saw coming when you and I went over there. So give them a call. Check them out. Check out the great memberships at Crestview. Yeah, opening day, like Thursday, where's Thursday going to stack up on the sports calendar days, which I already think should be a national holiday for the opening of Major League Baseball? I mean, are you kidding me right now? Right into the Sweet 16?
It's so good. Like, I love opening day of Major League Baseball rolling right into the Sweet 16. Like, you can't beat that.
The Rangers, the Royals playing at 3 o'clock. Can I play hooky? I might play hooky.
You got to go to a wine tasting.
Yeah. I might play hooky from that. No, I won't because they got TVs on, so I'll be good. It won't interfere with baseball. Baseball, 3 o'clock opening day. It's a little later than normal. You'll hear opening day of the Royals here on KFH. I mean, we're there. Like, we are there for Major League Baseball. We're into the Sweet 16. It's does it stack up for the opening of the NFL season? Those are my two favorites. And then you've got the first weekend of college basketball. You put the Masters in there.
Oh,
man, it's going to be hard to beat opening day. Into
love this time of year. It's my favorite. It's my favorite for sure.
All right, that'll do it for us on a Tuesday of Sports Daily. Tommy, glad to have you back and in the chair and, you know, whole again.
Yeah, good to be back. Looking forward to the rest of the week.
It's going to be a great week. So tonight, you've got Shocker Baseball. Nice little midweek at Oklahoma State. Wichita State needs to get things back in line here as conference play is underway on the weekend. So that'll be at 5:45, the pregame coverage, regular programming up until then. And we will just continue to get you ready for opening day for the Sweet 16, the women's tournament now, wide open for K-State. We got a lot to come for you with that. Trius Lotta joins us tomorrow. We'll get the latest on the transfer portal. It's all coming for you on a Wednesday edition of Sports Daily. Thanks to Felix Johnson. Thanks, Max. Thanks, Tommy. I'm Jacob. See you then.